going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Welcome to the best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. Thanks for hanging out with us here on the Off the Woodwork podcast section at 92.9 The Game on the Odyssey app. John Nelson here with you, one of the hosts on the SDH, the Soccer Down Here Network. And for those that may not know, the SDH Network does SDHAM kicking off at 9:05 every morning, Monday through Friday. And we go for a couple of hours, usually till about 11:05, and then it turns into 11:05-ish as we take you through the world of soccer. Yes, we are based in the Atlanta, Georgia area, but we cover everything going on in the sport, whether it's Major League Soccer, over one side of the Atlantic, South America, or the news of the day. We're always there to help you out, whether it is with the Morning Espresso and the 15 to 20 minutes that Jason Longshore gives you every single day to let you know what's on his desk and get you ready for the day, or in our form where we get to catch up with newsmakers and go through all the events and walk our way through the day-to-day in the sport of soccer. This time out, we're going to catch up with a couple of folks and let you know what those conversations were like. First conversation has to do with a friend of ours who is very, very busy. Analyst on MLS Countdown, MLS 360, and MLS Wrap-Up on MLS Season Pass, Bradley Wright Phillips, BWP, BWP99 on the social medias, came by and gave his look at Major League Soccer at the quarter pole and gave us the good, the bad, and the ugly, and specifically, since we are based here in the Atlanta area, what he thinks about what's going on with Atlanta United. Here's our conversation with BWP. All right. So now it is time for BWP to drop by, and thanks first off for coming in on a Friday. I know that you're getting prepped for everything. What I wanted to do here on SDHAM, other than welcome you properly and give you golden ticket status, blocks, so to come in on any Friday from 10 until whenever, because this is traditionally the hour of chaos where folks can come in and crash and say their piece 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and they can go.
I like that.
So Parkey kind of took one of my questions.
Okay.
About, you know, it's all good. That's what we're here for. So what's it like for you sitting at the table and doing the gig that you got now, where you get to put up with our buddy Kevin Egan on a week?
First of all, Kevin, what a guy, man. Our show, 360, you need to have energy. You need a good host, and Kev is, you know, perfect. He's the perfect person for it because he doesn't take a moment off, does his research, does his homework. He's enthusiastic. I sit right next to him, so that energy just falls onto me. You know, sometimes I'm tired and moody. I want to be a bit, you know, just relaxed, and Kev's just like punching me. You know, he's amazing. What a guy. But it's very different, obviously, being an analyst now and being in the studio, because I was the guy on the pitch, you know, trying to ignore these headlines, trying to ignore the media and what they thought, you know, trying to get my head down. It's, the transition was tough. I found it hard talking about players I knew. You have to get over that because you don't want to offend anyone. But I got some advice from my dad, and it was just, you know, anything you would say to someone's face, then you can say it on TV, you know, and that stuck with me. And now I find it easier to talk. I find it easier being myself. And that's thanks obviously to the staff and then the crew I have with me.
Two big topics that I do want to borrow you on here this morning over the next 15 minutes. Basically, the good, the bad, and the ugly here at the quarter pole. And I do want to ask specifically about what you think about Atlanta United. What direction do you want to go first?
Good, the bad, and the ugly.
All right. So good, the bad, and the ugly at the quarter pole. Who's the good?
The good are Vancouver, obviously. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Vancouver have been brilliant. Sorensen's done a great job. Even if you watched them last night in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, this is not luck. This is a well-coached team with very good players that, you know, us in this league, because they're not superstars and, you know, they weren't playing at big clubs abroad, we almost don't want to give these Brian Whites and Ryan Golds and these players, Takaoka, the keeper, Veselinovic, Blackman, these guys are stars right now. This season, they are stars. And depending on how this season goes, they should be recognized as that.
All right, so that's good in the Western Conference, good in the Eastern Conference, outside of Messi and friends.
I have to say I'm torn between three teams, obviously the three teams below, because I think Columbus, you know, this is a team I love dearly. I only spent a year in Columbus, but the way they treated me there, the football they played, it's just a great place to play football. And Wilfred Nancy's gone in there after Caleb and done a great job. I thought at the beginning of the season they would struggle a bit. No Cucho. You know, they lose Ramirez. That was a player that could come off the bench or start and get you goals. And I thought maybe that last little bit, that X-Factor is going to be tough, but they're still up there. You know, they're still up there. They're still coached well. Wilfred Nancy is a very good coach. So I have to put him in. I think that's a very good season, start to the season for him. Then Cincinnati, you know, looking at them, they haven't blown me away with performances. But again, it's a team that's built on some real, like, defensive foundations. They work for each other, real team, like ethic around that that squad. They're getting players back now. Evander's he's a very, very top player, top player. Yeah, they're getting him going. And with players to come back, I just think that they just get stronger and stronger. And then Charlotte. Because Charlotte, if you ask me, I'm not, you know, this early in the season, I know it's what, 10 games coming up now. I'm not putting them, you know, where are they in the league now? Second?
Yeah, they're right there. They're part of that gaggle, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so credit to Dean Smith and his boys. They still got to get Wilfred Zaha going. Imagine when he starts playing really well. Again, you're looking at a strong team. So I'd say that's the good in the East.
All right, so bad, East or West, take your pick.
I'll go West first.
Okay.
I have to throw the Galaxy in there because they are the Galaxy.
Yeah.
It's one of the probably the biggest team, you know, the most famous team in MLS. And when you see them in the league position they are, it's got to be tough for Greg Valley. Obviously, they've had their issues, but yeah, I've got to throw that in bad. The West as well, I'll just leave it with that, actually. Bad in the East, and this ain't the worst, and I'm with you guys now. This is more because, you know, the frustration. When I'm going to say Atlanta because, yeah, when you spend the money you did, especially on the attack, me as an avid football fan, I was excited to watch Atlanta United. Almiron coming back. I've played against this team. I've played against Atlanta when they are the top team at the Benz. It is a horrible place to play. Daunting. Honestly, if you don't get a good start, forget about it. You're going to feel like you're getting run over for a day and a half. It is a very tough place to play. It is. So I thought those days were coming back, you know, with this new front line. And I've been a little bit disappointed because I know the talent that's there. I know it can be put together. They just look a bit indecisive. The balance is off, and I'm not sure what they're trying to do. So for me, that's bad in the East because what I expected, I wanted to see more from that side.
All right, so we'll bookmark Atlanta and push them to the back. Ugly in the East and the West.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Ugly in the East and the West. What's ugly?
Mm-hmm. Montreal?
It's tough to say Montreal's ugly because and the fixtures, you know, the schedule wasn't kind to them. Beginning of the season, they have to play seven games away from home?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm in that locker room, if you know what I mean, if I enjoy that. I don't know how, you know, you get through a stretch like that. So it's tough to say.
You put the roof back on the Big O and turn that into a functioning place, probably.
Yeah, it's true. It's tough for me. Have you got any suggestions for me?
Well, I mean, I was thinking, you know, for me specifically, man, allergies are killing me.
They've been kicking my ass this morning.
So, I mean, I would have said, obviously, Montreal with their rough start.
Yeah.
You know, and you look at the bottom, I would have initially said somebody like New England, but then Caleb Porter found something.
Yeah.
DC, I don't know how folks made it off the tarmac in San Jose after what happened for the ride home. I really don't.
DC is a good shout because while they do have a great goal scorer, DC is they've been tough to watch early in this season. You know, they've been really tough to watch. Troy Lesane, I know, spent a little bit of Troy when I was at Red Bull, and he understands the game. I know what he's trying to do. He wants to play a decent side of football, also with that counter press thrown in there. And it's, you know, it hasn't looked pretty, but they did get a good result at Red Bull, which is not an easy place to go to. So I didn't put them in the ugly because I'm a fan of seeing teams turn around, turning that corner. As soon as I see a little glimmer of hope, I look out for that, you know, so I don't really have an ugly right now.
You know, and then ugly in the West, since you had LAG as a bad.
Yeah.
Ugly, I mean.
Go on. Kansas City, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, Kansas City. Again, similar to the Galaxy, it's a team that we expect, you know, like to be playing a good style of football, a team that we always expect to be competing in the playoffs. And when you see them as low as they are, or not stringing together some good results, you know, more often than not, yeah, you may have to put them in that bad category.
All right. So
very ugly.
No, yeah, that's all good. The man who has three business cards with, or actually four, if you just want to separate them all out. Analyst MLS Countdown, Analyst MLS 360, Analyst MLS Wrap-Up, MLS Season Pass, Bradley Wright Phillips. We are now at halftime, turning into the second half. And I want to break things down with you. You mentioned Atlanta United in the bad.
Yeah.
So I asked Parkey, I said, if you were in that locker room, because he and Greg Garza do a lot of work with their mentoring aspect now. They've got, I think, 250 student-athletes that they mentor with Beyond Goals Mentoring. And I said, okay, with your history with this franchise and your now mentoring currency that you have, if you were to wander into that locker room and talk to these guys, even though you weren't necessarily a talker all the time, but you had to stand up and say stuff, what would you say? And so it's, you know, it's like, look, it's going to turn around and the conversation's going to be there, but you know, just keep pushing and pushing and the moments will come and then it will snowball in the positive from there. Unlike the snowballing that's been going on so far. When you see Atlanta, you mentioned obviously putting them in the bad because of the expectations, but what else have you noticed about Atlanta United this year in 2025?
I mentioned it a little bit earlier. It's just that I don't know if they – it's like the defense is trying to play one way and the attack is doing another thing. I don't know what they're trying to do. I can only imagine if I was, you know, coaching that side, and I'm by no means a great coach, it just looks to me like it's a team that, you know – They shouldn't play like Columbus or San Diego, a team that looks like they're suited more in transition moments. When I think of Sabo on the right, he's great running into space. He's great getting on the end of passes. Latte Lat has pace to burn, pace to spare. I would like to see him more, you know, out on the run, getting onto through balls and being set free, running in behind. Almiron, when he plays on the right, I don't think it's been as effective because I think he's lost a couple of yards, but I do think he can still do that central 10 role where he's dropping into pockets, turning and creating from there and driving breaking lines. I just don't see a real way of them playing. I don't see, you know, the things that make them dangerous, the things that I just said, I don't see them doing that enough. So I think if I walked into that locker room, I'll be trying to, you know, get the boys all playing one way. You know, if I'm Latte Lat, I'll be talking to the center backs or the midfielders. You know, when you see me in this place, let's run. Just play me in behind, you know. Play me in behind. Even if I don't get it, we're up the field and we're attacking in their half. I think they're in a place now where it can't just be relied. You can't just rely on dialogue. It obviously, it's his responsibility, but the senior players in that locker room have to come together. I remember whenever we were going through hard times, especially at Red Bull, we start from the beginning again. We start from the basics. First 15 minutes, maybe we play in their half. Don't concede. Then we get to that 50, past that 15 minutes, it's a different task. And before you know it, it's halftime. The result's better than it was last weekend, and there's something to build off. I think they have to go back to basics and forget talent for a minute. It's get together, be hard to beat, and then take steps from there.
What about somebody like an Alexei Medanchuk, who we know his artistry?
Yeah.
And we know what he is capable of, almost like that point guard that you see in basketball.
Yes.
Who knows where folks need the ball. But it's like we talk about positional gravity, and it's something that you know a lot about, considering that when you had the ball, you had like nine dudes just come and collapse upon you. But that also means that eight other guys are open at that particular moment. When you see someone like Medanchuk with his artistry, and he played a little deeper against NYC at times because they were trying to come back, and you saw what he's capable of. What about somebody like Medanchuk?
You hit a nail on the head. I when I look at Medanchuk, like there's been a couple of times where he's had to go in that six role and build the game for Atlanta. If they are going to build, if they do want to play that way, he has to be in that six role because he's really good on the half turn. And I think him playing in the six takes a lot of responsibility. I don't want to put, you know, I don't want to say that he's a man that is not built for that moment, but I think when you play him in a 10, we all look at him and be like, okay, make something happen. We look at him in that Evander role, you know, in what Almiron has come here to do. And I think it's a little bit unfair on him. So if you play him in a 6, I think he's really good, like I said, at getting on a half turn. Then he can find those players. When you put him in a 10, I don't think he's a man for the big moments in, you know, in every game. I think you see more of his qualities playing deeper on the field, deeper down the field. And I think that will help Atlanta a little bit more.
And, you know, in this system that Ronnie currently has formationally, it's a 4-2-3-1. You're dealing with two sixes. You have guys like Bart Sleash, who he's got a bit of a mean streak to him. But you're also seeing younger players like Jay Fortune step up. You see Mateus Klick, who was brought in from D.C. for a pack of Pall Malls, some Hostess Twinkies, and a box of matches. And, you know, when he gets healthy, I know what he can bring to the table as well. When you look at the rest of this roster outside of that attacking four, what else do you see?
I see good players, especially if you're getting the right ones on the field. I see good players. I see a team that can play both ways. I see a team that could play in transition, and I see a team that could build if the right players are in the right spots. This is why I put them in the bag, because I don't get why I'm not seeing it. There's no excuse. It's a good roster. I'm seeing teams with, if you take Austin, for example, that roster is not better than Atlanta's, but they've got some kind of togetherness. They're hard to beat, and they're somehow right now up the table.
They can't score. It's like, you bring in all this heavyweight talent, and what? Vasquez has two.
Yeah.
Bakari
on the...
Yeah.
It hasn't been good enough. You're right. That's what I'm saying. For them in attacking third, it hasn't been good enough. But they can still be up the top of the table.
Yeah.
So for me, why is Atlanta not doing something similar? I'm not saying play that style of football.
Right.
But I'm saying, you know, at least putting these performances where, okay, the attack's not going well, but you don't just come to the Benz and beat us.
Right.
You know, this is a difficult team. This should be a difficult team to play against.
Then you dropped a whole lot of am to bring in Robert Taylor away from Messi and friends to help out with your offense.
Yeah.
3-minute warning. I know I'm keeping you to a clock.
No, you're good.
All right. So this weekend, it is Atlanta and the Purple Team in Central Florida. See, the thing is, the only way that we can mention the O word here is if we sing it like Book of Mormon. So literally, we have to say Orlando if we're going to say that. Otherwise, they're just the Purple Team.
You're good. I used to do that when I played for the Red Bull. I would call the New York City, the blue team. So
yes.
I get it, man. I get it.
So Atlanta United and the Purple Team coming up this weekend. When you see this kind of a rivalry match like you did with Red and Blue, what sticks to mind in this matchup for you?
So you're talking about gameplay, first of all?
Yeah.
I'll talk about gameplay, first of all, and then I'll talk about how I would go into those games. So I think gameplay, the game's there for the taking for both teams. Both teams not in a great place. So if I'm in each locker room, I'll go into that game thinking we can win this. If we just do ABC, we can win this game. For Orlando, at the moment, that front four that started off so well and not firing on all cylinders, they're struggling, and that plays into your hands. I think if you can make the game difficult in the first half, then you're looking at maybe getting a good result. But I expect to see fireworks. These are the kind of games that can turn your season. These kind of games for Atlanta now, if you get a big win here and build momentum from this place, you can look back come, you know, October and whatever and say, you know what, when we played that game, when we beat one of our rivals, I think that's where you can put, you know, a stamp where the season started to change for them.
All right, last question for you. The time to cut the promo, because you are on MLS Countdown, MLS 360, and MLS Wrap-Up on MLS Season Pass as MLS Bradley Wright Phillips. I feel like now MLS needs to be in front of every single aspect of your name with everything that you're doing up there with Apple these days. What's going on this weekend? When do you go into production meetings? When do you get to see Kevin Egan? What, cut the promo for me. What folks should expect this weekend?
Okay, so I'll head up to Connecticut on Saturday morning. I'll get to the studio maybe 2:30. Sit down, gather my thoughts, and that's when you start seeing the boys come in. First of all, yeah, production meeting. And then we'll go on air for the first countdown, maybe 6:30. You know, after all the prep's done for those few hours, 6:30, do an hour, just building up the games, building some excitement, letting you know our opinions. And then straight after that, we won't even move from the studio, 360, and that's when it gets hectic. And that's where your boy Kev comes in and just gets that energy going. We just got a bunch of games going on, a bunch of goals, bunch of key plays. Just a lot of fun. It's a long time, but that's like the most fun you can have in 5 to 6 hours, honestly. It's brilliant.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide, or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball. The game's official home for games is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.
What's it like flying without a net for 6 hours?
It's crazy because you're watching, so the monitor will be to our right somewhere. So I want to focus on the show, but I also want to see what's happening in the game. So when we do go to that key play, I have some good feedback for you. I have some good analysis. There's been times where you get caught, you might miss a goal. It comes up as a key play. We get to watch it, obviously, but I haven't seen the build-up. So I don't even know how this goal's come about. You know what I mean? So it's hard really focusing on the game that's on the screen, what you guys might be seeing, and focusing on getting little nuggets for you guys. So when you see that key play, giving you the information. It's crazy. It's carnage.
It is. But the thing is, you may not be able to see the buildup, but then you get to see the buildup on MLS Wrap-Up, right?
Facts. So the Wrap-Up is like it's probably the show where you get to really talk about what you saw in a game, because we've seen them all on the Saturday, and now we do the Wrap-Up on Sunday night after Sunday night soccer. So Now I've seen all those goals. Now I've seen all those build-ups. Now I've heard all the talks, what people think and what my opinions are. So wrap up, you can really have conversations. That's why you see it's a more laid-back vibe. We're in the sofas, you know, we're in the comfy seats and we're talking and really dissecting these games and our thoughts on the weekend.
Especially after sitting in a hard chair for 6 hours. Yeah. As always, you are officially now golden ticket status. You have the garage door opener. You know where the spare key is. And so anytime you want to come in and crash in this hour of chaos as we get the weekend prepped, you know you can.
I like that. Thank you for that invitation. I'll be taking you up on that.
Golden ticket status is yours, Bradley Wright Phillips. Once again, Analyst MLS Countdown, Analyst MLS 360, Analyst MLS Wrap-Up, Analyst MLS Season Pass, Analyst SDHAM. There, I went ahead and said it. I've added you to the business card. BWP, as always, thanks for dropping by, my friend. We'll see you soon.
Appreciate you, Joe. You're doing a great job. I keep up.
All right. See, because I know you're going to come down and kick my ass. If I be safe. And then as a part of our Friday, what we usually like to do is we will have conversations with our friends at Beyond Goals Mentoring and find out what is going on when it comes to the world of starting a new business, being there to help out the next generations of the sport, being there to help out the parents as well. And we get to see it through the eyes of Michael Parkhurst and Greg Garza, two Atlanta United legends, folks who have spent time with the U.S. men's national team, getting caps there. And so this time around, we got to catch up with our captain, my captain, Michael Parkhurst, and find out what's going on with him. Yes, we did address what's going on in his mind with what's up with Atlanta United, how he might mentor in these situations, and how what you're seeing with Atlanta United from the outside mirrors some topics that he gets to tackle with mentees in his present day. Here's our conversation with Michael Parkhurst that had a bit of a crossover with BWP. Woo! Time to catch my breath. Time to catch up with our golfing buddy, Michael Parkhurst. What's going on, brother?
John, get some water. Take a shower. I don't know. Golly.
I was trying to run down what's going to be on for folks to watch on TV on Friday and Saturday, and I didn't realize the list was going to be so long, and I'm like, oh, crap, there's Parky. I better wrap it up.
There's just a little bit of soccer on this weekend that people can watch.
Yeah, so you've been a busy man recently. Rhode Island FC, you now know what's going on. You got a name for the – oh, he's sporting a jersey on a – you're the man. You are the man. See, and once again, I told everybody about that. I said that, you know, Beyond Goals Mentoring on one sleeve, Soccer for Good on the other, Kaiser on the front, SDH on the crest.
Right.
Yeah, see?
Golly.
Right there, man.
It's beautiful.
It is.
Hey. I just did a social post. Well, I created a video for social.
Okay.
Breaking down a goal that will be posted on social with this jersey on.
You are the man and a half. You are absolutely awesome. So let's see, your stadium for your team has a sponsor. It is now apparently going to be hosting the Major League Rugby Championship game as like one of the first big things in the venue. So you got things moving up there at Rhode Island FC and Open Cup, man.
Yeah. Moving and grooving. I'm headed up there next weekend for the big opener against San Antonio next Saturday. And then, yeah, midweek the next week, we play the Revs, which is amazing. What an opportunity.
So, all right, how chaotic is this for you because of your history with both of these teams in the past tense and the present tense clashing like this?
not too much, honestly. I mean, I really enjoyed my time with the Revs, but I don't have a great connection with the club anymore. So I'm much closer with Columbus and Atlanta, obviously, but you know, I still follow them, obviously, like every other club in the league, but there's no hiding who I'll be rooting for when we play.
Uh-huh. Absolutely true. How much RIFC gear do you actually have?
You know what? Not a ton. I don't know why that is, John, but it will change when I go up there next week and I ravage whatever they have.
It's like mine. It's like Mr. Parker. Yes.
Yes. Like, put it on the company card.
Yes. Yes. On the Underhills tab. Yes. Absolutely. That's where it's going. The Amex card. You want the Underhills Amex card? I can give that to you. You know, when you have all of these cool things going on, I know that your time has been divided with what's been going on up there with the good, with Beyond Goals Mentoring and the good.
and then with what's currently going on with Atlanta United. And I would ask it this way. If when was the last time that you were in a situation where a team stumbled out of the gate with a whole lot of promise and was able to turn it around? Were you ever in a situation like that in your playing career?
I honestly can't remember a time where we were towards the bottom, you know, a quarter of the way into the season. Mm-hmm. But I mean, last year, and this is obviously a different level, but Rhode Island FC, we were second to bottom midway through the year.
Yeah.
And we went on a fantastic run and turned things around. So it's very doable. And I'm still bullish on the rest of the season. I still think the talent's there. I'd be shocked if they don't add another piece in the summertime. It's just a question of getting things together, getting the confidence as a group up, figuring out who plays where and what formation and all that. So I still think that this group is more than capable of winning games. It's just not doing it right now, which obviously is not great. But
I mean, when you see a group step on a rake, you know, or, you know, tie their shoelaces together and they don't, and it doesn't go the way that you anticipate. I know, obviously, for you as a professional athlete, it's frustrating, but for as someone who has his heart on his sleeve for this franchise, considering everything that you've been invested, it doubles and triples when it comes to how much you want it to turn over quickly, how much you want it to succeed, because you know what's there. You know some of those folks. You've seen them work. And it's like you're waiting for that one moment, I think, to trigger that run that you're talking about, like you had with the RIFC last year.
For sure. And honestly, I think it's more of a group mentality and confidence thing than anything else. Because like I said, the talent is there, and obviously it comes down to the manager to motivate and get everybody on the same page and, you know, maybe change the style a little bit to try and get a few points. Right. I said that on a podcast the other day. Right now you're in a situation where you do anything possible or needed to get 3 points.
Yeah.
And then once you have a couple games where you get 3 points, then the confidence is back, and then you can, you know, go out there, do your thing and play the exciting, beautiful brand of soccer. But right now, I think, you know, this weekend, you'd rather win 1-0 on an own goal,
yeah,
than play beautiful and lose 4-3.
Yeah, and especially in a rivalry game against the Purple Team in Middle Florida, where you have all of these things combining, where it's the slow start. It wasn't anticipated that it was going to be this way. You're trying to do whatever it takes for a win just to kind of reverse your fortunes a little bit because of all of the posts that you've hit and the crossbars and the calls and just not getting the results. And you're now amplifying that with a matchup against the team that, you know, that you drive each other crazy when it comes to Major League Soccer. So that amplification it's almost, you know, X number of times more than it would have been under a normal circumstance, in air quotes.
Totally. And you're right. They have been a little unlucky. You know, I think that the New England game, they should have won. You know, of course you get unlucky here and there. And so it happens. And of course it's easy on the sidelines to say, well, you should have scored 4, you know, but you know, I've never seen a call like that, and I still don't agree with it. I still think that's a good goal for Miguel. I thought the penalty was really soft. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. It's just sometimes things are going against you, and you need to, you know, make your own luck. And so hopefully they're able to do that because, again, I think it's there. I think they're close. But I know nobody wants to hear that. They just want to see results.
Yeah, but, I mean, at the same time, I think that but being reminded of what you're capable of, I think that's just as important. And I think that, you know, when you and Greg have those opportunities with the 9 gazillion mentees that you have and that you have the influence of, I think just being reminded, and we see this from Ronnie a lot in post-match pressers And during the week, he's constantly speaking the positive. There isn't any ishing going on about, well, you know, no, they just need to get their head screwed on straight or whatever. There's always that positive reinforcement that's there. I know that you and Greg do that as well when it comes to your mentoring, but to have a manager that is just as impactful in a professional situation with all those positives, I think that's just as key. And saying it publicly, I think, is just as important.
Totally, totally. Because the easiest thing is to say, oh, we need to work harder. We need to focus more. It's not a lack of effort. When you watch the game, I watch the games and I don't see a lack of effort. It's not that. And so it's just little things here and there that need to come together. And I think they will. But yeah, and I agree with the manager. I see what he's saying. And it's not obviously what all the fans want to hear. They want to hear exactly why is it that we're losing or we're not playing well and fix it. But as we know, it's not that easy all the time to pinpoint things and get everybody on the same page and get the confidence of the group and confidence of the individuals and, you know, limit the little small mistakes individually, right? It's a big picture thing for sure.
How much positive reinforcement do you and Greg do with your mentees?
A lot. And I think it's important because we don't know how much they're getting of that outside of our conversations, right? From mom and dad, from coach, from whoever, right? Teacher in school. And I think everybody can always use some positive reinforcement. What have you done well? That's one of the things I love to ask kids is, hey, give me a win that you've had in the past couple of weeks. And I don't necessarily mean the biggest win on the field, right? Something you overcame, right? Was it a test you studied hard for and it went well? Or, I don't know, you mastered a juggling trick or whatever it is, right? Give me a win, right? Focus on some positives and say, hey, good job, man. Like, congrats. That's great. You know, keep winning. And I think we can all use more of that.
What was the last win that you had?
The last win that I had, that's a great question, John.
So if you look at yourself in the mirror and go, so Michael, what was the last win that you had? What would you answer to yourself?
The last win that I had was, I'll say yesterday. I had a very, very productive day, just in general, very focused as far as getting ish done that I needed to get done that maybe I've put on the back burner, or just, you know, sometimes things come up and like, oh, I could do this or that, and very productive day. And I take that as a win.
Well, I mean, but you know, there's a reason we call it ish. It's because it's like, we don't want to touch it. We don't want to have anything to do with it. I mean, but I think that to your point, and I go back to one of the best movies of all time, The Replacements, where Jimmy McGinty, who is anything but a traditional coach, Pat, Gene Hackman, in one of his roles as the crusty NFL-ish kind of a coach, he has a team meeting with all of the players, and these are the guys that are assembled together. You know, they're brought together, and Keanu Reeves is their quarterback, and they have that one game where things are going wrong. And so it's like, all right, I want to take this energy and I want to talk about quicksand. And everybody's like, quicksand? And it's the idea of one thing going wrong, then another, and another, and you just get stuck in quicksand and there's no way to try to get out of it. Mm-hmm. When you have these discussions, whether it was as a professional athlete or as a mentor these days, have you been in that situation where you're trying to get out of the quicksand and trying to talk to folks about getting out of it, whether you're the one who's pulling the rope or whether you're the one that might be a part of being in the quicksand? Have you ever had any of those kind of moments?
Oh yeah, absolutely. For sure. I mean, I think back to, I can't remember. I think it must've been 2017. We went like, I don't know, 8 games without a win, something. It was like right in the middle of the season. And it was not going well. We weren't losing all those games, but we weren't winning. And that's tough on a locker room. So I understand, you know, how the group's feeling over there in Atlanta. It's difficult, right? And you see it at the end of the game where there's no accountability from players to stay and talk to media. Right. I think I saw something where it was the two young guys, Noah and
Jay. Yeah.
Yeah. And Jay that talked to the media. And that's just a small example. But yeah, for sure, within our mentees, we talk about it too. And that's why we try and say, hey, it's really important to try and snap back really quickly. And the big reason is we don't want to snowball. And we know that once a snowball starts going, it becomes tougher and tougher to stop it and reverse it. And so the easiest time and the quickest time to do it is right away. And so can you bounce back quickly? And so that's what we try and give the kids the tools to do, is to refocus and adjust quickly before that snowball gets too big.
Are adults better at addressing the snowball, or are youth better at addressing the snowball and turning things around these days?
That's a good one. I think that.
Oh, and I mean, it might just be case by case, but having to break it down individually. But I mean, because of the reason I ask is because, you know, when you were young, I'm sure that, you know, addressing the snowball was different than when you were a professional athlete. And when I was a kid back in the 1780s, when James Oglethorpe colonized this state that we're based in, you know, I'm sure it was like, you know, rub some dirt on it, that kind of a thing. Just, you know, dust yourself off and get your, you know what, back out there. So I don't know if it's a generational thing where younger players are easier at addressing it versus adults. And that's why I wanted to know, when it came to your ideas, who is easier.
Yeah, I think that the smaller the snowball, the kids are bouncing back quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think that we as adults tend to just brush it off, like you said. And like, we know, okay, if the snowball gets really big, we can address it and figure it out. But until then, I'll just ignore it, you know, or forget about it or whatever. But I think the younger generation, or at least we're trying to help them, is, hey, no, just address it now, fix it now, get over it now. That way, because they're not usually equipped to get over the bigger snowballs. And those can be much tougher for younger players and people.
You mentioned Noah and Jay, and specifically, they have come up through the system. They were academy. Noah was a 15-year-old going up against dudes that were twice his age in USL Championship, and he wasn't flinching. And Jay hasn't done any of that either when it comes to going up against folks that might be 10, 12 years older than he is. And you can sense in them, and not just after the loss last week, but you can sense in them the pride that's attached with working through the system, coming through the academy. And, you know, when, you know, you sit there and you grab the crest and you sit there and you grab it and you kiss it. And they know what that means when it comes to their day to day. When you see your mentees have that kind of pride as well, what's it like for you to sit there and say, oh, okay, they get it. They understand what it means to have that logo on the shirt and what they got to do 120% of the time.
Yeah, that's a great feeling. I think that it's fantastic when a player has that pride within their team, because you know that they're willing to go the extra mile, to really stand up for their teammates, to really commit everything, which is what you hope every athlete finds the place to do. But I also think that it speaks to those two guys' mentality of maturation. And that's the reason why they have, and one of the reasons, a big reason, why they have progressed all the way through. Because I'm sure there's been more talented players probably than both of them in the academy at one point or another. But as we know, it's not just talent that gets you there, right? These guys understand the process, and they understand what it takes mentally and physically to continue to get to the next level and keep pushing it. And so, yeah, they're not going to be in awe of many situations, because they've got a good head on their shoulders and they've prepared for these moments. And so, yeah, that's a big part of it.
What about for those adults or those other talented folks that come into that situation and may not understand what it means? They did in their previous locations, and they understood what it meant then, but when it comes to, you're with Atlanta United as an example. So you have a player who comes in who doesn't understand what it means to be a part of Atlanta United. What are the conversations like early on with those new additions to a roster to sit there and say, no, it's a big deal here? What kind of conversations? How do you impress upon those new folks coming into a situation what it means and what it should mean?
Well, I think, you know, it's easy to lecture, but it's tough for the other person to sometimes take it in, right? It depends on the individual. And so our biggest piece of advice is find someone that's been there for a while and make sure you're sitting at their lunch table and listening to what they're talking about and what they say, and find a good pro that's been a pro for a really long time or been at this club for a long time, and watch what they do over a week. And not just on the field, right? What time do they get to the training grounds? What do they do before training? What do they do after training? How are they taking care of their body? All those things, like, watch, learn, right? That way I don't have to tell you, right? Just use your eyes and, you know, you'll see it. So, you know, that's definitely our biggest piece of advice. That way we try and keep the lecturing down as much as possible.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, when you're at, well, and right these days as a mentor, what you want to do is you want to have conversations with, you don't want to lecture.
For sure.
Because especially with the younger athlete today, they don't like I don't think that they really take a whole lot to being lectured to. I think that they, if your conversation is, and correct me if I'm wrong, if the conversation's honest and there's give and take where they can sit there and feel like they can speak freely with you, even if you are, you know, Michael Parkhurst in bold font and, you know, capital letters and everything, I think that if there's an honest give and take, the constructive criticism, they can take it and they take it well. Whereas if you come out of the blocks and you're just straight, you know, finger pointing and lecturing, it's just going to be like, all right, I'm changing the channel. I'm out the door.
Totally. And that's what good leadership is, right? It's not just leading. It's asking. It's questioning. It's listening. And so, yeah, in our sessions, of course, we try and ask questions and we try and have the mentee speak, you know, 40, 50% of the time, right? What do you think? What do you see? How did you feel? What do you think you could have done differently? All right. In all these different situations that we talk about. And then we can say, hey, yeah, have you thought about this or what about that? Or, you know, this is how I dealt with this, you know, when I had a similar situation type thing. But yeah, it's a delicate balance.
So if you were in the Atlanta United locker room and you were to have those kinds of conversations, how would you want a conversation like that to go? You're asked to speak to the current roster. You go
in the current situation.
In the current situation. So if you in the current situation, you are asked to go in and have a conversation behind closed doors. I'm asking you to have a closed door conversation and let me know what you would say in a closed door conversation, basically. I don't think you're going to come at it with the hairdryer. There might be moments where you would, but what are the main talking points that you would have to the folks in the room?
Without going into individuals, I would try and keep it more of every team goes through points like this in a season, every team, no matter what. And the ones that come out of it together and figure things out are the strongest teams at the end of the season, right? They have figured it out and they've been battle tested and they've regrouped and they've figured it out. And when they figure it out, they're going to go through another period throughout the season, right? Or maybe in a game. And you have to be able to look at each other and bounce back quickly, right? In a playoff game, you don't have time, right? You have to bounce back quickly. You know, there's going to be different moments. And, you know, this is a moment for them. And they have to pull together. And the other thing I would say is, like, guys, you're Atlanta freaking United. Like, you need to, like, have a chip on your shoulder to say, we are ballers and we are the better team. Whether you believe it or not, or whether it's true or not, that's the belief you need to have. And so, hey, we're going to go out there and we're going to show that we deserve, or we think that we deserve, right, to be the ballers of this game. And does that mean we need to dictate the game the whole time? No. But that means we, even if we're defending for 60 minutes, we can still put fear in the other team by counterattacking, right? There's different ways to put fear into the other team. And, you know, I think that they're still capable of doing that, but it definitely starts with some belief and some knowledge that, hey, we have each other's back and we're going to get out of this. And, you know, maybe start with just getting a point this weekend.
When was the last time you stood up in a room and had to give a speech like that?
It's been a while.
How'd that feel?
I don't really love giving speeches. I did it as infrequently as I could when I was playing. But I think that also helps it go over stronger. The message comes out stronger because, you know, if you're yapping all the time, you get tuned out.
Yeah, because if someone like you that is the quiet, confident leader, you know, that's like you want your actions to do it most of the time. Because when you do stand up, everybody's like, oh, you know what? Oh, ish. Look, if Parkey's standing up and he's talking and he's addressing the room, then he's really got something on his mind that he wants all of us to hear, you know? I mean, who were those quiet leaders when you were playing outside of when you were the leader? Who were the leaders that you learned from when you were playing?
Yeah, Jeff was for sure a quiet leader within the team, right? He just took no ish, like, on or off the field. But also he was like, you know, a guy you could talk to off the field and everybody respected and he went about his business, right? Jeff, for every single year, felt like he had something to prove that no, somebody doesn't respect me. Somebody doesn't think that I'm good enough. And every year it was, I need to show it. I need to prove why that's not the case. And so, yeah, that's an incredible mentality to have. And it's why he played for so long and had so much success. But he was definitely a quiet leader. I had a really good captain in Norshlin, who was I respected a lot. And he was the same way. He was loud when he needed to be, but just, you know, really had the respect of a lot of the guys, everybody actually. And I think that for me, it's about showing up every day and doing the little things. It's, are you out there grinding every day with everybody else and doing it? And that's why Darlington is a leader as well, right? The guy doesn't take days off. It's incredible. And he's not loud and he's not the rah-rah and he's not going to, you know, really talk in a huddle and things like that, but everybody respects him. And that's because he does everything the right way.
All right. So what's with BWP coming up in a handful of minutes? We got the purple team coming up this weekend. What's your favorite purple team memory?
Oof, gosh. So many.
I was going to say, other than beating them every single match when it mattered.
Yeah. Joseph scoring.
Bothering, yes.
Yeah.
Bend your face.
What was that? What goal was that? That was the all-time record for a season?
Yeah, it was the Bendick face where he's hopping up and he looks, and Bendick's just like, you know, the Bendick face goal. But, yeah, we got BWP coming up in a couple of minutes.
That's the favorite memory for sure.
Yes. All right, so what's going on at Beyond Goals these days?
What is going on? We finished up high school talks, still onboarding our newest member. I'm setting up high school talks up here in Ohio for the first time. So
there you go.
Doing that as well, expanding and trying to put together a camp for Thanksgiving.
There you go. So is there going to be like turducken for the camp MVP? Are you going to have stuff like that?
Turducken.
Yeah. You know, like, you know, when you get the Madden MVP, it was always like the turducken and you get the leg of the turducken if you're a team MVP on Thanksgiving.
Okay. I like that. TBD.
Okay. TBD. So, you know, when you look at all of these, all this stuff with Beyond Goals, I mean, we got playoffs going on down here. What's it like to expand into Ohio?
Yeah, it's a different season, right? So up here, we play high school soccer in the fall. So, you know, having these conversations in the late summer is what we're setting up for. But yeah, I'm excited because, you know, it's just broadening our horizons and getting to speak with more athletes. And that's always a good thing.
How many mentees do you guys have right now?
Oof.
11 gazillion?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Hundreds.
What's that? I mean, what's it like to have hundreds of folks knocking on your door and asking you and Greg for mentoring advice?
It's awesome. We love it. That's why we do it. It's phenomenal. It's really cool to think that we're helping people out and they're appreciative. And that's why they keep coming back, honestly.
So, all right. So next week, when are you leaving to go to Rhode Island?
Thursday.
Okay. So Friday morning, next a week from today, if you are at Centerville Bank, can you crash the party in like 9:30 and come in with your phone and just kind of give us a tour about the stadium if you're there?
You text me and remind me, yes.
Oh, that'd be sweet. See, because you get to give the walking tour. You wear the hard hat and everything. And
gosh, if we need hard hats on the day before the opener of the, you know, we're in trouble.
That's true. So then wearing your Rhode Island FC gear. How about that?
There we go.
All right. So where's Deacon?
In her spot, John, as always, you know, just living the tough life.
Yes.
Absolutely. With her strawberry.
Yes. All right. So I'm going to do a crossover here because we have cleared into hour number two and coming in early, believing in the Tom Coughlin.
Of course he is. He's a true pro.
True pro. So we're going to do a crossover here starting hour number two. We welcome BWP to the proceedings in BWP. Michael Parkhurst is with you as he's on his way out the door. And here's analyst for MLS Countdown, MLS 360, and MLS Wrap Up on MLS Season Pass. It's MLS BWP here with Michael Parkhurst.
Big time.
What's up? Can you guys hear me good?
You're good, man.
Parky, I can't believe you're leaving, bro. It'd have been nice to chat to you.
Nobody told me that you were going to be on, Brad, you know?
I didn't know,
get the heads up.
I didn't know. You got to come on the show, actually. You have to come on the show.
You let me know. You let me know.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Michael, before you go, and I know that the fourth has held up the banner here, what question do you have for BWP?
Ooh.
And don't think.
Toughest thing about the new gig.
I think in the beginning, great question, by the way. The hardest part for me was trying to be myself, like just how I jump onto this podcast, just like right this second. I'm trying to get that more, you know, be myself, analyze the game, say what I think, but sounding like Bradley. When I first got on, I was trying to sound and I felt like I sounded like other people. Now I don't care if the word I use is a little bit different. I want you to know who I am while I'm talking about this game. That was the hardest part.
All right. So BWP, question for Michael Parkhurst.
That's a tough one. Okay. You weren't the biggest centre back, but I found you one of the most difficult to play against. How did you gain your advantages?
Using my brain. I had to avoid physical confrontation, right? Because every striker, even yourself, was stronger and faster than me. So anytime I was in a 50-50 was no bueno for me. So it was, I had to be there before them. So I had to know where the ball was going, give myself the extra moment, and always have my brain on. Couldn't relax because didn't have the physical tools to just be lazy and make up for it.
It felt like that, right? Playing against you. It felt like that. Sometimes I'll do like a double movement or try and spin somewhere. And I'll look over when you're there. I'm like, why are you here even? You know, I meant to have left you on the first one. But yeah, credit to you. It was tough. You had to think playing against Mike.
All right. So Mike, are you looking at BWP's hips in a situation like that? Are you looking at the running back and sitting there going, okay, the hips are going this way and I'm just going to follow him there? What are you looking at?
No, there's not time for that. It's more what I see and what I would do, what I think strikers will do. Like, oh, where's the space? Where should he run? Right. And then going to those areas. And obviously you see it time and time again. And shoot, Brad and I play against each other a lot. And so after the first few times, you get a sense of like, okay, he likes to make these movements. He likes to do certain things. And then you're just trying to guess a little bit here and there, right? Sometimes you just, especially on crosses and stuff, it's like, I got to just put myself in the best position that I think it's going to go to. And then, you know, a little bit of luck helps out. But yeah, just, I'm not looking at the body position so much as where I think he should go. But Brad was one of the great ones along with Wando. It was like, what he's talking about, double movements, right? A lot of strikers don't make double movements. It's easier, right? But the double movements really throw the center backs off. But him and Wando and Landon, the smarter guys, always so much more difficult to defend.
Cap, as always, thanks for dropping by when you can. I will text you about your time at Rhode Island FC next week, and we can get the tour of the new stadium. Thanks, as always, for dropping in. We'll catch up with you soon, my friend.
Parky, good to see you. Right. See you, gents. Catch up with you, Parky.
Always great to catch up with Michael Parkhurst and find out what's going on in his mind. And it was kind of fun with Michael and BWP because, as you heard, BWP didn't know that Michael was on ahead of him. And so I assume that they got to reach out with one another and catch up. And now that BWP has the garage door opener and Michael Parkhurst has always had the garage door opener, it'll be good to see if they come in the hour of chaos on Fridays
just to kind of let everybody know what's on their mind on a weekly basis. And welcome to SDHAM and the best of SDHAM. John Nelson here with you. And what we do on a daily basis, Monday through Friday, 9:05 Eastern time, we take you through the world of soccer. And there are times where I know that soccer fans are less than pleased with what they see with the gentlemen who either carry the flags, hold the flags parallel to the playing surface, hold up the boards to let you know how many minutes are left, and also try to implement the laws of the game using all of their different personalities. And what you get to see every single match week from our friends at the Professional Referee Organization. After a little bit of thought and some conversations back and forth with Pro, what we ended up doing was asking if we could have an interview with anybody at Pro to kind of get the lay of the land and what it's like to be an official and what it's like for those that wear the uniform and have the jersey and they get to call matches in Major League Soccer, what it's like for them and with them here on a daily basis and a weekly basis when it comes to implementing the laws of the game. Because there have been some instances in Major League Soccer recently where folks have been less than pleased with the output that they have seen from the officials that manage the games that we watch. So we caught up with the general manager of Pro, Mark Geiger, and it was a great conversation that we were able to have with him and find out about implementation, laws of the game, characteristics of each and every official when you're wondering about corrective policies and things like that. It was a well-rounded conversation, and he answered our questions. Here is SDHAM's conversation with Mark Geiger, the general manager from Pro. Mark, so what cup of coffee are you on?
Actually, it's only my first, John, so not too bad.
Okay, well, first off, thanks for taking the time, because I know that a lot of folks who watch the sport, especially here domestically, they got a lot of questions about what's going on. Are you ready, sir?
I am ready. Let's do this.
All right, so my first question for you is, when it comes to the officials in Major League Soccer here in 2025, how would you grade their overall performance this year?
I think we started off pretty well. There were a couple rocky weekends that we had coming out of the gate, you know, and that's going to happen for clubs and teams and players, you know, shaking off the rust a little bit. But past few weekends have been really strong collectively. You know, we're always going to have situations to talk about, you know, debatable decisions that are made. But overall, I think things have gone well.
When it comes to pairing sets of officials, whether it's VAR, AVAR, and the folks that are on the pitch, how far in advance do you sit there and look at pairings and go, okay, I want this group with this group, or is how do you determine who's upstairs and who's on the pitch?
Yeah, we release the assignments to the officials about 3 weeks in advance, you know, and we start really 1 month ahead of time looking at the fixtures, looking at personalities in the game, what the demands are, and then what referee is going to have the best personality and have the greatest chance of success on each game. So we're not just picking names out of a hat and putting them onto the field or in the Excel spreadsheet. We're actually trying to pair them up to be as successful as possible for the game.
So, you know, when it comes to levels of experience, obviously, how much does that play into it too, where you want to try to have, you know, even distribution of experience in Major League Soccer upstairs and downstairs?
Yeah, there are games where it's going to demand a senior crew on the game. And then there are some games that we think with the personality of the players and the demands that the game is, we anticipate, you know, somebody that maybe lesser experience can be very successful in the game. You know, when we have newer referees, yes, they will have experienced assistant referees or experienced VAR. So we do some pairing in that from that standpoint. But for the most part, these are all professional match officials. They've come through the ranks. They're very experienced by the time they even get to MLS. So we're confident with all 100 plus officials that we have on our roster.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Yeah, you mentioned the levels of confidence. How do you maintain, I guess this is a two-part question, my first two-part question of the day. How do you maintain levels of education when it comes to laws of the game to make sure that everybody's on the same page and that they know, okay, here's how this has to be administered going forward on a year-by-year basis when it comes to the schedule?
Yeah, we meet with all the referees in Dallas. We get together every few weeks and we look over the situations, the most critical situations that we've had from the past few match rounds. So that's how we really ensure that we have as much consistency as possible in how the game is called. You know, you certainly want to have the same level of experience, same level of application of law throughout. So really getting together on that monthly basis is really important for our match officials.
When you have older, newer, when there's a bit of a bell curve when it comes to level of experience upstairs versus downstairs, how much of a watchful eye do you have from the league office and from your perch to sit there and it's like, okay, I need the two of you to handle this properly. I don't want one level of experience, whether that person is downstairs as center ref or upstairs as VAR. I don't want that person to try and make sure that there isn't any, you know, unconscious steering, I guess, of results. You don't want to have a younger official intimidated from speaking up in a situation, whether they're upstairs or downstairs.
Yeah, the lesser experienced officials, we expect them to lead if they're the referee. The referee is the captain of their team. So even if everyone around them are the most experienced officials that we have in our roster, we still expect that lesser experienced official to lead their team throughout the game, prior to the game, and post-game as well. I don't think any of them are really intimidated by the league looking in or we're watching all the games. We're able to listen into the audio, and I don't think that intimidates them at all, because in the end, everything that we're doing is there to make them better, you know, for the game and for themselves as well.
So when you have these the consistent evaluation processes, what goes into this constructive criticism to where it is constructive criticism, and the officials, whether they're experienced or not, they don't sit there and take it too personally?
No, it's always constructive. So every single game is assessed. Every single official on the crew is assessed by an independent evaluator. So they'll go through positioning, movement, teamwork, match control, game management, player management. They'll look at all those different aspects for the assistant referees, offside decisions for VAR, whether they recommend a review or not, and really going down into the process that they take. So every single referee or official gets a score at the end of the game, but there's also the key match incident score, which is done by the pro management. So there's a panel that will evaluate each situation and decide if it was correct or incorrect. And then there's constant feedback with the officials through phone calls, Zoom, in-person meetings. So the managers are each working with their officials to really get the best out of them for their next game.
I was going to ask, what's the turnaround time with that evaluation where, okay, there's a match day, and then outside of the constant Zooms and everything, is it that every couple of weeks you get evaluated outside of the constant Zooms, or what's the turnaround time?
Oh, they'll get their feedback that week from every single game. So the assessor will talk to them before a Wednesday. The KMI panel, key match incident panel, will then evaluate on Wednesdays, and they receive their written feedback on Fridays. So during that next week, they're getting with their managers and talking with them about their performances.
If there is an official that, I'll use the word worrisome for lack of a better word, if there is an official, or whether, you know, they're an AR primarily, or if they're a center ref, or if they're a VAR, what is the path toward improvement if all of the analysis and the evaluation is worrisome to pro?
Yeah, well, we have a couple options that we can do. Since we service so many different leagues, we can certainly put somebody down into the second division or third division if they really need some rehabilitation, let's say. But that's something that's not done very often at all. We may pair them with some more senior officials to help them through their next few matches. You know, but really it's all about building up their confidence and getting them back out on the field with correct decisions. You know, we don't want to take severe action. Like, we could always remove somebody from their next assignment. Yes, that's done a few times each year because of something so controversial. But for the most part, most of the decisions, if there are some errors, they're subjective, they're gray. You know, we're just looking for something a little bit different, a small tweak that they can apply in their next game.
Okay, so since you mentioned Gray, let me get into deliberate action here.
Yeah.
I do want to double back and talk about sure. You know, promotion and things like that, and getting from USL from you know, wherever you go to higher divisions and things like that. I do want to get to that. But deliberate action has come up in the last couple of weeks, different games, and how do you through laws of the game / pro view deliberate action? How do you sit there and say, yes, that is deliberate action? What is your definition?
You know, it's interesting. This is something that's it's very rare in the games, first off. So to have 2 weeks in a row of very similar situations is pretty unique. FIFA and the IFAB had put out some guidance on this a couple years ago, which kind of swung the pendulum a little bit. They were saying that we would look at reaction versus action. And anytime there was an action, officials were saying that it was a deliberate play, and so offside wouldn't come in. But they said it really wasn't fair for defenders, because they were trying to challenge for a ball where they had absolutely no real opportunity to really control it. You know, so they swung the pendulum back a little bit, and they're looking for a fit. They're looking for players to have control of their body where they can control, possess, or clear the ball comfortably. You know, so if they have to stretch for the ball, they have to reach for the ball, or they're not balanced, then it's not going to be looked at as a deliberate play, even though it might be an intentional or a deliberate action. So in the situation Atlanta-New England and the situation St. Louis-Vancouver, both of those situations, the player stretching or the defender stretching for the ball. So really no possibility or no expectation that they can truly control the ball. So the expected decision in those situations is offside.
So the effort by the defender, if I'm interpreting this correctly, so that the effort by the defender to make a deliberate action to stop the ball in its progress doesn't necessarily apply. It has to do with controlling of the action and wherever, you know, it's like.
Exactly. Okay. And really, it comes down to expectation as well, expectation of control. So just if a player is just poor at what they're doing and can't control it, but there's an expectation that they would control it based on the speed of the ball, it's on the ground as opposed to in the air, then there's no forgiveness. You know, then it's going to be still seen as a deliberate play. But again, in these situations that we had these past few weeks, in both of those, there was no expectation of them to actually be able to control the ball because they had to reach for it. So that's why we saw the video reviews in both situations for the offside.
Halftime with Mark Geiger here as he has parachuted into SDHAM, and we're discussing everything pro and calls and pros and cons and calls and everything in between as he has his first cup of coffee and I have my first cup of Mountain Dew. If deliberate action is leader in the clubhouse right now when it comes to the one particular law of the game where fans have the most hue and cry, is there a second one that is the one that is the most tackled, so to speak, when it comes to pro?
Well, I think it's going to be handball. You know, handball is probably one of the most difficult situations that we deal with every single weekend. You know, I probably talk about handball with coaches and clubs more than any other topic. You know, there's so much subjectivity, what's natural, what's unnatural, what's justifiable, what's the intent of the player, even though we're not supposed to talk about intent. So that's one that's always been a hot topic and something that we talk about a lot within our group and trying to achieve as much consistency as possible.
I was going to say, so what is the talk like at the table when everybody has their, you know, their hot tea or their cup of coffee? What are the talking points here?
Well, each situation is different, so it's really just trying to decide what the player is doing, what the defender is doing in most cases, since we really talk about it in the penalty area. And are they trying to block, or is what they're doing completely natural for a player that's challenging for the ball?
When it comes to VAR in and of itself, do you have referees that want to have that as their natural track? Do you have folks that don't want to do anything on the field? They just want to be in a booth someplace? Or do you have both sides where you may have those referees that may not necessarily physically, you know, have the meet the markers when it comes to tracking 8 miles a match, that may gravitate toward wanting to be upstairs and be that expert counsel in VAR? Do you have both of those folks heading to the booth these days?
I think it's a little bit of everything. You know, you have officials that have been on the field for many years and have retired from the field, and they see this as an opportunity to continue in the professional game. You know, so you have just to call out one name, Kevin Stott, who was on the field since year one. You know, it was time for him to hang up his boots, but now he's one of our most experienced VARs. We also have a crop of officials, of video match officials, that are on their way up the system. You know, so they may be working USL or working NWSL matches. And while they're looking to move forward, this is an opportunity. They're very good at analyzing video. They're very good at considerations. So we give them an opportunity in booth, and it's a good introduction to MLS, the players, the referees, and what the expectations are by having them in the VOR.
So when you have these kinds of when pro is what it is, and right now Major League Soccer has the crews that are available to it that you assign on a weekly basis or, you know, once a month ahead of time. How do you gauge that next wave of individuals who are either in NWSL or USL Championship or League One? How does pro view promotion and we already talked about relegation to a degree, but how do you view promotion when it comes to officials getting ready to that next level?
Yeah, we're constantly watching the matches that are in that second division and in the women's leagues that Pro 2 services. So we do have almost 100 officials doing those matches, and we're across those games. There's a whole department for Pro 2 that has another set of referee managers and coaches that are working with these officials, and there's a lot of conversation between those that service MLS and those that service the other leagues. So we have our list of officials that are performing in a very good way. You know, we know who our trialists are going to be to give them an opportunity to show themselves in MLS to see if it's something that they're going to be able to be successful in going into the future. We always have officials that are talking about retirement. We have injuries that we have to deal with just like any club. So we need to be ready to backfill those positions that open up.
So when it comes to training and making sure that your referees are as healthy as consistently as possible, what is it just up to the individual, or does Pro have its own training program? Hey, you know, we want you to hit these markers, we want you to have this as a BMI. I mean, how do you handle that?
Yeah, we have a couple, we have a whole sports performance department, so that's headed up by Tom Beckfermit, and then he has some other coaches that are below him. So the referees and any newer assistant referees all have to be part of that sports performance program. Many of the veteran assistant referees, they've had their program since they started, so, and we're confident in what they're doing. So we let them go ahead with that. And in the Pro 2 space, they also have exposure to the sports performance coaches. So it's a very structured program. They get their daily workouts each day to perform, and they need to report back with data. They all wear watches in order to collect their heart rate data and speeds and all of that information. And that goes to the coaches.
When it comes to the administration of fouls, that you have some folks that might be at 21 and a half on average, some folks that might be north of 30 on average. And I know that the fan may sit there and they see the numbers being as disparate as they are, and they're wondering about consistency of personality and a personality of a ref involving the personality of a match. And I know that probably goes into the discussion in assigning these kinds of folks. But for fans that sit there and they see somebody who calls a lot of fouls, and it might be in a matchup where the two teams are kind of freewheeling, and then you have a ref that doesn't call a lot of fouls, and that might be one that, you know, you could end up with 5 minutes for fighting if you're talking the National Hockey League. How do you gauge, once again, those ideas of, yeah, I know you call a lot of fouls, I know you don't, but you still benefit what Pro is trying to do in navigating a match in Major League Soccer?
Yeah, we still have our expectations on what's a foul and what's not a foul. Of course, everyone has their own interpretation when in those gray situations, you know, that narrow band of is it a foul or is it not? You know, ones that we would sit there and debate, you know, and the officials are very consistent within themselves on how they navigate those areas. I think that the foul count or the average foul count is pretty consistent across the board. You know, early in the season, you may see some disparities, but that's just because the demands of one particular game were higher or lower than something that the other officials were seeing. You know, so when we see that disparity from game to game, it's really what the demands of the game were and what the players are doing on the field, and then how the officials responded to that.
When it comes to the fan these days and the players, here's one: crowding. Right now, I know that if you're a man in the middle, all you really want to do is you want to talk to the guy that's got the C on, but that doesn't necessarily happen every single time. What kind of feedback do you get from your refs about, okay, look, it's like there are like five guys here and they don't need to be here? What feedback do you get about the crowding situation and folks trying to chirp in your ref's ears?
I tell you what, the captain's not always the best person to talk to. Also, there might be somebody that's a little bit more calm in a situation that the referees can talk to. And really, we encourage them to manage every player on the field or talk with every player and try to get the best out of them moving forward for the game. You know, but we have only the captain this year, you know, which is a worldwide initiative in order to tackle dissent and tackle mobbing of officials, where if officials have 3, 4, 5 players that are coming in a more aggressive way, they can initiate only the captain, where they create about a 4-yard space around them. And only the captain is able to come in and talk to the referee at that moment. And it's a really good opportunity, because now the expectation is not only will the referee just say, no, I was right, or it's a clear penalty for me, they'll actually provide now an explanation to the captain as to why they made the decision that they did.
Are in a situation like that, when crowding still happens after the fact, and I know that the fourth is holding up the board for us here, are you satisfied with how your center refs are handling it when crowding continues after you still end up with, you know, no more get out of my space, I want to talk to this guy?
Like they've done around the world, last year we initiated a dissent initiative, you know, so we gave them clear guidelines and we told them that we would support them all season long when they started issuing yellow cards for dissent in these situations where there's clear aggressive behavior or mobbing of the officials. So if they do only the captain and they're speaking to the captain, somebody else steps in order to dissent, we expect them to give yellow cards in these situations. But because of only the captain, we've seen a decrease in the number of yellow cards for dissent. It's having a positive impact so far. I'm hoping that continues all season long. But I think it's a really good tool for them to clean up the game. The image is really important for us, because anything that the grassroots players and coaches and fans see on TV is something that they mimic down at the levels that they're playing in. And we're seeing a decrease in referees at the grassroots level, which is ultimately going to hurt the professional game because there's a smaller pool to choose from.
I was going to say, before you get out of here, best advice you can give for somebody that wants to be involved at the grassroots level to someday possibly be in Major League Soccer?
Try it. Just try. Pick up the whistle, pick up the flag, get out there and have fun. It's a great part. It's a great part of the game. It's a great way, another pathway to be part at a higher and higher level. And we have referees of all races, genders, abilities out on the field. So there's an opportunity for everyone to move up the ladder and be the best referee they can be and to be part of the game at the highest level they can get to.
Mark Geiger from Pro, the Grand Exalted Poobah, top of the pyramid. As always, great to see you. Thanks for coming on and answering some of our questions. And as always, now that we know how to get in touch, you know that sometimes we'll be knocking on your door. Thanks for dropping by SDHAM. Be good. And once again, a big shout out to our friends at Pro to be able to have these kinds of conversations with Mark, batting a leadoff out of the blocks this week in one of the days on SDHAM. Once again, SDHAM on the Soccer Down Here Network. You can watch it live on YouTube. It is archived on YouTube after the live show is over on a daily basis. You can also watch us live on X. You can also watch us live on Twitch. And you can also dial back onto those social media accounts and catch up with the content that you missed. In addition to catching up with the greatest hits here on the SDHA, the best of SDHAM here on the Off the Woodwork podcast section at 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. We'll be back at it again Monday morning, 9:05 Eastern time, to take you through the weekend that was in Major League Soccer, give you all the news of the day, get you through the end of the month of April as we go sprinting into May past the quarter pole here in Major League Soccer in the U.S. So once again, thanks to Bradley Wright Phillips from MLS season pass, and once again, let me get all the job titles here when it comes to BWP. Once again, Analyst MLS Countdown, Analyst MLS 360, Analyst MLS Wrap-Up on MLS season pass, and so we're just going to call it MLS BWP. Michael Parkhurst from our friends at Beyond Goals Mentoring, you can catch up with them at beyondgoalsmentoring.com, and the GM of Pro, Mark Geiger. That was a great conversation with him, hoping to have him back in the future as the laws of the game change and as folks are wondering with the questions and interpretations on a weekly basis in Major League Soccer. So for everybody here at SDH, once again, follow Soccer Down Here on all of our social media platforms, including Blue Sky now. And let's see. So it's Facebook, it's Blue Sky, it is X, it is YouTube,
all of those, and Instagram also at Soccer Down Here. So follow us, be a part of our conversation every single week and every single day, Monday through Friday, and even on the weekends too, because that's when the action is actually played. We're sitting there, we're calling matches, whether it's MLS or MLS Next Pro, high school, all over the place, college, WPSL, you name it, we're there. Just around the corner from everything. That's us here at SDH. So once again, for everybody at SDH, I'm John Nelson. Thanks for hanging out with us here for the best of SDH AM. Play it safe, everybody. Mucha plata, y'all. We'll catch up with you again next week.